to address that, or that Ways and Means is ready to address that this session. But I think that if we increase witness fees and mileage in civil cases, that increases terrifically the logical argument, which obviously already exists today, for increasing the amount that the state pays in criminal cases. And I agree with you, Representative Dix, but I think this is a positive first step. And I
would agree with Representative Bauman, and that's why I think certainly we should move this one down. The question remains, is there a fiscal impact with this bill without amendments? And the court administrator's office tells us, in fact, there is. So,
can we have a copy of that?
Yes.
That we can have for the, so we can get copies of it right away.
What, just to clarify, I have no problem sending this down, but I, along with Representative Bauman, would like to address the issue perhaps at another time regarding criminal fees, if it's not this session, those who serve on this committee in the future. Maybe they.
Representative Dix, let's dispose of this for the day. We'll get copies of that fiscal and allow counsel to draw up amendments in regard to that. Well, why don't you take the lead on drawing up the amendments? What is it that you're going to do to the bill?
Well, my intention is not to address the criminal part of witness fees in this bill for fear that the weight an amount of money would kill the bill in Ways and Means. I think that everyone was interested, it seemed to me, in the hearings process of making this, writing this in a way so that there was no fiscal impact statement. So I would try and get a hold of the bar and find out what their proposed amendments that they said they were going to offer, if we could write those in the bar.
Yeah, and I think Kingsley pretty well said it.
Right.
Write out the civil commitment witness fees and the other witness fees that the state has to pay. Yes.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I believe it's David DeMartinez from the bar who made the original testimony, said that he had expected there to be amendments, and they had concerns to add in infractions as an exception as well, because those are not necessarily considered criminal per se. So it sounds like there are a couple of areas. Would you like him to speak?
Yeah, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to get the rest of this information, and we'll bring this up at another time. I just want to state for the record, the chair is opposed to this bill in its present form, and will probably be opposed to creating a two-tiered system. And I expressed that at the public hearing and would express it again. Representative Dix.
I was just going to ask the chair, perhaps he would enlighten us, but you already have, as to your opposition. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll put that off, and Representative Dix, why don't you take the lead on those amendments?
Okay.
We have 3197 up next, and I know that Representative Springer, Representative Springer and Representative Campbell both, I believe, wish to testify in addition to what we've already done on 3197 on another area. It's Representative Springer. Representative Springer's assistant is here. Why don't you come forward? And while you're doing that, let me just comment. Well, I talked to both Representative Springer and to Representative Campbell today on the issue of these amendments that are before us. This bill will be carried over, and said that each of them would have 15 minutes time to speak to the subject matter of the amendments. Council, do you have your notes on what technical form 3197 is in committee at this point? Have we adopted any amendments?
Yes, we adopted the dash one amendments at the last work session.
Please go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ed Leek, legislative assistant to Representative Springer. I'm here in support of amendments, which I believe the committee has, was discussed at the last work session on this matter. Basically, they deal with...
Just a second. What amendments?
They're the 3197-2,
Dash 2. Okay.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have Mr. Ira Zaroff of Oregon Legal Services join me here, who would like to offer...
As I told Representative Springer, he has 15 minutes. Spend it wisely. Representative Campbell has the same thing.
Mr. Chairman, we will be brief.
Okay.
The purpose of these amendments is to deal with the issue...
I might just comment that Representative Campbell indicated that although he would speak today, that we would carry... I told him we'd carry it over because he had some people that he wished to come testify at another time. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Purpose of the Dash 2 amendments that you have before you are to bring the issue of grandparents' visitation rights into this bill. This has been a matter that's been discussed at a couple of previous legislative sessions. We have crafted amendments which I believe will do that in a manner that will take some very large strides in the direction that that the supporters of bills in this direction have sought to go, and beyond those have established some standards within the amendments, which is something that has been lacking in the previous proposals in this regard. Mr. Zaroff can perhaps speak for just a couple of moments on the basically what the effect of these amendments would be.
Ira Zaroff from Oregon Legal Services. Been asked to comment about these amendments. Basically, what we feel that they do is create a balance between the grandparents' right to visit children and the parents' right to raise those children. We think that the important part of the amendment is that it sets out a standard under which grandparents can enter into the process, and they can enter into that process when the grandparent has established significant and ongoing emotional ties with the child, and the custodian of the child has denied the grandparent a reasonable opportunity to visit the child. And when you talk about custodian of the child, that doesn't mean just a parent. It means anyone who has custody of the child at that point in time. We think that those two things are essential to creating a workable relationship between grandparents and custodians, and that without the requirement of having ties, people who have not been involved in children's lives, people who have not been interested, might be able to come forward and act in a way which would not be in the best interest of children. We represent both grandparents and parents, and in these kinds of matters, we feel that this legislation does create a balance and does set for the court some way to determine whether or not visitation should be granted to visit to grandparents.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, the substance of the amendments, first of all, allows all grandparents to petition for visitation. Current Oregon statutes allow only grandparents of a child whose parent has died to petition, or the grandparent of a non-custodial parent, and only allow a petition upon the death of a child or when there's a dissolution of marriage proceeding in progress. These amendments would allow petition at any time when the standard of the refusal to have the child be visited has been met. And as Mr. Zaroff said, it sets a standard for the significant and ongoing emotional ties. So it's a very substantial expansion of grandparents' rights. Now, the only time when a grandparent can intercede is their child has died and or there is a divorce proceeding in progress. I was reading the minutes of the hearing on this bill in the in the preceding session. Representative Bellamy and I know had a concern that the that there was a possibility under the existing statute, or was impossible under the existing statute, for the grandparents to petition when there had not been a dissolution of marriage. These amendments would allow for the grandparents to petition when there has been no divorce, but there has been ongoing emotional ties, and the parents have refused the grandparents the right to see the child. Mr. Chairman, that's really all we have.
Let me ask a question. This would allow a petition at any time?
It would not allow a petition if a grandparent had been involved in an earlier dissolution matter. Other than that, it would allow a petition, I believe, at any time.
And it would allow if there's a reopening of the decree, it would allow the grandparent to come back in again.
Further question. Would it allow, maybe this is directed at Ira. I'm trying to find it. What has denied the grandparent a reasonable opportunity to visit mean?
I believe the court would have to determine that. From reading the amendment alone, I don't know what the parameters of that would be.
Mr. Chairman, our intention in drawing that was to indeed allow the court the discretion for the grandparents to come in to make the petition, to establish the facts in the individual case, and to argue that there had not indeed been an opportunity for reasonable visitation and for the court to make that decision.
Further question, what does significant and ongoing emotional ties mean?
Once again, Mr. Chairman, that's a matter for the court to decide. I think we can state the extreme cases. We could have a case where perhaps the grandparents had not even sent a child a Christmas card for 13 years or something, and never talked to him on the phone, had never seen the child, and suddenly they wish to petition the court for visitation. That's a case where there's obviously been no significant ongoing emotional ties. You have another case where grandparents have been at the child's house every weekend for 10 years and have taken the child out on outings, have given birthday presents and Christmas presents, and have been involved in the child's life. Those are clearly significant and ongoing emotional ties. For those cases in between, which obviously are the vast majority of cases, once again, it would be a matter for the judge to decide when the petition was being made.
Questions of either of these two?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll use the rest of our 15 minutes some other time.
Pardon?
We'll use the rest of the 15 minutes some other time.
We got eight more.
Thank you.
Representative Campbell. Yes, Representative Dix.
I perhaps would like to have Ira come back at some point, following the testimony from other folks, if that's okay.
We have some, in your packets, you have some correspondence from Representative Campbell's office.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Larry Campbell, State Representative District 43. As the chief sponsor for the Grandparents' Rights Bill for the past three legislative session, I would have appreciated having a hearing on House Bill 2627, which basically is the Grandparents' Bill. I received information through my staff that Mr. Leek had indicated that there would be no hearing, nor would there be any consideration of a bill regarding this subject with my name on it. I then heard that amendments were going to be presented today on this particular piece of legislation. So what I'm doing is I'm here to testify and ask that you submit the amendments that I have provided you on House Bill 3197. What we have done since we received copies of the amendments that Mr. Leek has presented to you is we have reviewed those amendments, and as you will note by our amendments have included some of the items of concern. We've also eliminated an item of concern from last session, and that was approval of the courts before an individual could leave the state with a grandchild, where rights had been identified for the purpose. I would say that I appreciate very much the chairman of this subcommittee's willingness to have a continuance on this, because there are literally hundreds of grandparents that would like to have the opportunity to testify on a bill like this. But of course, the bill we're dealing with today, until these amendments are considered, is really not a grandparents bill. The Dash 3 amendments provide for the following.
Representative Campbell, I think if you look at House Bill 3197, the subject matter of which was posted for a long time.
I hope you're not taking my time now, Mr. Chairman.
I'm not. We welcome you here. 109.119 starts out relating to any person, including but not limited to foster parent, step parent, grandparent, or relative by blood or marriage. So I think I disagree with you that subject matter has not been referred to. But anyway,
well,
please continue.
Well, what I was saying, Mr. Chairman, I think, is that the piece of legislation that these folks have been watching for is the grandparents' legislation. And as you know, when people track bills in this process, those are the ones that they're going to appear on. Since that bill will not receive a hearing, as I understand it, as I mentioned earlier, it is important that those folks have the opportunity to comment on the content.
I agree, and
of this.
That's why we'll continue the bill.
I'd like to go on with the Dash 3 amendments, provide for the following. Any grandparent, not just non-custodial, may petition the court for a hearing if deprived of a reasonable opportunity to visit grandchildren. I'd like to underline the fact that they may petition the court. If a divorce, separation, or annulment is involved, any grandparent may still petition the court for visitation rights during a domestic relations suit. But after a divorce decree is final, any grandparent may petition for visitation if no petition was made during the suit, or if circumstances have changed to such a degree as to affect the welfare and support of the child. The amendments do not require a court to review prior to a family moving out of the state with a child, as I mentioned. And most importantly, the amendments do not guarantee visitation rights, but only the right to be heard. The court retains full discretion to judge the merits of the petition and to consider the best interest of the child. The major difference, as far as I can see, between the Dash 3 amendments and the Dash 2 amendments is that Dash 2 amendments set out strict criteria for the court to follow in determining whether the grandparent may have visitation rights. Frankly, I trust the courts to be the judge of this situation, and as you asked two technical questions, and those who preceded me with the Dash 2 amendments referred to the fact that those decisions should be left up to the court, I feel that basically this is an important difference in the two. Certainly would expect the courts to award visitation rights to real grandparents and not to award them to those who suddenly appear on the scene as they face their own mortality. So, Mr. Chairman, I very much appreciate the courtesy that this subcommittee has given me. I hope that you'll give strong consideration to the Dash 3 amendments, and we will assume that folks will have an opportunity to be heard for the short time that would be left in our 15-minute period.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dix and then Representative Bellamy.
Representative Campbell, can you enumerate again what the differences there are between Dash 2 and Dash 3?
Basically, Dash 2 sets up some specific criteria directing the court. Dash 3 basically leaves the responsibility to the court to make the decision. Both cases are petitioned. Truth of the matter is there's not as much difference as one might imagine in these two packages. Dash 3 is very close to what the House of Representatives passed last session, that upon adjournment was still sitting in the Senate. They didn't have time to act on it because of the rather late time in the session we dealt with it in the House.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dix.
I guess, Representative Campbell, my concern, and I think the subcommittee chair has made the proper decision in moving this on, but my concern once again is that they won't deal with it in the Senate. I'm a co-sponsor on your original bill, and I also feel the issue should be dealt with. With tort reform being over there and no other issues being dealt with up to this point, they have a huge backlog as it is, and the longer we wait on this issue, the less likely it is that they're going to have a hearing on it no matter when we send it over. So
if you were prepared to move Dash 3 out today, amending it, Representative Dix, I probably wouldn't object too strenuously. I'm really objecting to the fact that as a state legislator, I've been told that my bill, because it's my bill, wouldn't get a decent hearing in this committee by a staff member. And from my standpoint, that is apprehensible.
Representative Campbell, I'm glad that you referred that critique to other than staff members of this committee.
Oh, absolutely.
And members.
Absolutely.
Representative Bellamy.
Larry, what on page 2 of your amendment, do you have any idea what that line is referring to, 19 and 20? Wait a minute now.
Well, there are cases where the person depriving the grandparents of visitation rights because of the deceased, because not being a family member, would be identified as different than the parent. Basically, what they're saying, Bill, is when the petition is filed under the paragraph, that they need the name of the person or persons depriving the grandparent of visitation rights.
I've been asked staff to look at that. I've tried to read it, and it doesn't flow right. And so maybe staff could look at that.
Sure.
That's a list, Representative Bellamy, of the information that must be included,
included
in the petition. And it's just referring under certain circumstances okay. what must be included. So I think it seems to read okay to me.
Any other questions, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Miller.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. I'm confident that we could act rapidly on these amendments, considering that we've had this concept in the House for at least the past three sessions, and frankly, I think the Senate can handle a question like this in rather short order. I don't think it's all that complicated, if indeed they want to prioritize this matter, and I would hope they would.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate your time and your courtesy.
We'll close the hearing on 31, or the work session on 3197, and Council, I'd ask that you remind me in our meeting to reset that the next time that we are up for a work session. Have we missed anything except the public hearing?
No.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Bellman.
Before we leave 3197,
yes.
could I ask staff to as you're reviewing this, can you tell me if there's any limit and not today but later, if there is any limit in either the dash 2 or dash 3 amendments that would limit the number of times a grandparent could petition? If it does not, then I would like to visit with you about ways to do that.
Anything further on that? We'll close the work session on 3197. And the last two things we have are 2324 and public hearing on 3374, which will be after the civil commitment bill. Let's take 5 minutes and come back here at 10 to 3. Be in recess. Mary Wendy Roberts to testify on House Bill 3374, and we'll start off with that. So Commissioner Roberts will be up on public hearing on 3374 before we get into the civil commitment bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your courtesy. This bill, 3374,
is in response to a problem that developed that some of you may have read about in the paper that has to do with public accommodation discrimination and the posting of racist signs which prohibit entry or or otherwise imply that a public accommodation is not open to certain segments of the public. In this particular case, individuals who are members of the black race. We did not. And I think that a lot of people don't realize the kind of discrimination that's still ongoing in the state of Oregon. House Bill 3374, I believe, fills a conspicuous gap in the tools at our disposal at the Bureau of Labor and Industries to fight public accommodation discrimination in the state of Oregon. Currently, I am empowered to file my own complaint, a commissioner's complaint, against places of public accommodation, including those which might post illegal signs or other means of communication purporting to deny equal access to that public accommodation. This authority has been on the books for decades, but I am the first to use this authority. And I'm told by those who were there at the time that the law's original purpose was to allow enforcement on behalf of black entertainers on tour who were not likely to be staying in the state long enough to follow a discrimination complaint through the system. The commissioner then could, through the vehicle of a commissioner's complaint, still take action for them. The problem I've encountered is the lack of any immediate and effective sanctions in the law, even when a commissioner's complaint is ultimately found to be valid. Aggrieved citizens may be reluctant to step forward or may not be found at all who can testify as the direct impact on them of the public accommodation discrimination. Even when, for example, there is a clear violation of the law forbidding signs refusing admittance to a public place to members of a particular race, without an individual complainant, I'm unable to levy monetary penalties, which is often the only way to get a violator's attention and compliance. Prior to hearing, which can take months to reach, my hands are effectively tied. If informal efforts to conciliate and achieve compliance have failed, illegal signs and racist displays can stay up and may be a catalyst for violence, as well as simply being a front to all Oregonians. House Bill 3374 fills those two gaps. It allows a temporary cease and desist order to operate before hearing, and it authorizes a civil penalty of up to $1,000 for each violation of the law. In short, it provides a fast and effective response to public accommodation discrimination that is sorely lacking. I would prefer not to discuss the recent case, which you probably have read about in the paper, because of course that will be going to hearing, which we have set. However, it has highlighted those gaps and the need for legislative action is clear. That's why we requested this bill be introduced. Since the introduction of the bill, certain technical problems have been brought to my attention, which I'm prepared to address with suggested amendments. A brief memo with the amendments is attached to my written testimony, which has been provided to the committee. Basically, those amendments simply avoid any due process questions that might arise under the current language. It allows a right to a hearing by the respondent in response to the temporary or permanent cease and desist order. And it conforms some of the language that it was used in the bill to make consistent the identification of the respondent. In the original bill, the respondent was variously referred to as party, person, and so forth. So those are the amendments.
Thank
you. Any questions?
Questions, Commissioner Roberts.
I also have Kelly Hagan to my right, who is my legal policy advisor at the Bureau, who can also answer questions.
Thank you. I know we'll hear more later on, particularly from Representative Dwyer, and we will get back to this bill.
I also believe that Representative Margaret Carter would like to testify in favor of the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll close the public hearing on 3374 and open it on 2324, the work session on 2324. The civil commitment bill that we have before us.
Okay, we have from my member, we have Dr. Bray, and we had also Joe Murray earlier. I don't see him right now. I do not know who's looking at these meetings. I think maybe
we have somebody here.
We're supposed to be
okay. just to outline, I think we'll get to the one of what people may think to be the crux of this bill, although that's not my personal opinion, the commitment criteria. And we've had, I just want to inform everybody that I've had some discussions with Mental Health Department and the AG's office in this area. I think if we look at Section 5 of the bill, pages 4 and 5, this committee has received a letter from Mr. Crowmeyer's office, which was from Glenn Klein, which was addressed to Mr. Murray from Mental Health. I understand there's a representative of Mental Health and the AG's office here today, and I'd ask that those two people come forward. And introduce yourselves.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Don Bray, Assistant Administrator of the Mental Health Division.
And I'm Lawrence Young, Assistant Attorney General.
Mr. or Dr.